Hey guys, welcome to the MC Anime Podcast.
We cover anime, geek culture, Japanese aesthetics, and Asian studies. We are a multi-fandom podcast, and you can expect to hear topics in your favorite hobby or fandom activity potentially. You can find MC Anime on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Also, please check out mcanimepodcast.com, our website. Furthermore, stay tuned in for another episode.
Hey guys, this is another episode of NC Anime Podcast. NC here, and we have another special guest with us today. Fox, how are you doing today?
I'm very good, thanks. How are you?
Pretty good. Tell the audience of what you do or what you want them to know about you.
Okay. So I'm Fox. I'm from the UK. I'm born and raised there. I've liked anime and manga for a while now, so I think maybe since around 18, 19, I've started watching them. But I mean, I've seen quite a diverse range of anime and manga, I would say. There's not like one specific genre I would watch. And I was approached by a friend on Discord to maybe be like a guest speaker for a podcast for a range of different topics. Some of them being about anime, manga in Europe. So here I am.
Oh yeah. Fox is the dearest guest. Liz recommended him she's my editor, so pretty much, and graphic designer. She has really interesting connections and have lots of different guests to introduce to her, so give her a shout out. But further ado, today's topic is going to be anime in European pop culture. So what that means is we're going to cover like the landscapes that take on a European theme that anime use, the shonen category getting a rise in the popularity, the fan community actually evolving, so meaning like starting, getting a fan base started, that type of stuff, and then overall influence of pop culture in Europe, you know, like and all the stuff growing over time. We'll probably do an overview of the pop culture. So what is the pop culture like in the UK and Europe overall?
I'd say I can't really speak for the all of Europe as I don't know much about it, but I mean, I can try and give some comments on that, I guess. But I mean, I think from what I've seen so far, like Europe's probably driving the increase in content for anime at the moment. I feel like it's probably that one of the park growing. I mean, had a look at some of the measurements and some of the statistics of it. I think like Germany, Italy, France, Poland, Spain, Finland, and the UK as well. The measurement that we've taken was, I think there's at least a 3-9% growth in spikes in anime interest in Europe. So I feel like it is a big growing market, and Europe probably is going to be a big part of it. I guess general trends, but as well, I guess people are probably getting into anime a lot younger as well. I'd say like maybe when I was like younger, I think you were either like really young or maybe you were quite old when you watched anime. Certainly when I remember when I was watching anime as a kid, like it was mostly like Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, Dragon Ball, like Naruto. I mean, they were like kind of the more popular ones, like what people mostly watched. And it's kind of like just branching out to like other ages now. So it wouldn't just be like whether you're young or old. It's like a bigger range of people now. I'd say people are getting into it typically more younger now, especially since there's a lot more subscription services too. So we've all heard of like Crunchyroll being like a big anime provider for people, you know, in the US as well as across Europe. And then there's also Netflix too.
They became a publisher and a distributor at the same time.
Yeah, right.
Netflix is interesting, trying to grow in the market. They're doing what any big company would do, invest in original properties, and then those IP is its own catalog that they own. But a lot of times, the typical outreach a platform will get is the licensing and the bid to win that licensing credits on their streaming platform. That's typically how they do it. Netflix is just doing it.
Yeah, they're kind of just trying to leverage the growing popularity of anime at the moment. And like you said, I think they're also, you know, they're doing their own licensing, but they're also kind of producing sort of their own non-Japanese animation as well. I mean, like, just the biggest one off the top of my head was, I mean, like, Arcane, for instance, it's like not a Japanese an anime, but you know, it's similar characteristics.
Castlevania
anime.
Too.
Yeah, Castlevania as well. Another good one. It's just kind of reaching a bigger target, just reaching a bigger audience of people.
Yeah, and Castlevania is interesting because it actually does take the theme of the European landscape to a really higher degree than I would say. And that's a nice bridge to the next topic. But I also think using a storytelling mechanism into a story itself and using realistic settings and maybe a real-life place can actually help people identify with that place. I mean, yeah, you had the fantasy grandeur, build their own world, but you also have real-life locations that can also play a big role in realistic storytelling. I mean, at least in that aspect. What do you think about that?
So is that kind of leading more into like the settings and the landscapes of what sometimes animes take on when, you know, they might be set in Europe or might be focused on it? Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I think when I was kind of thinking about this topic to begin with, I mean, there was some shows which kind of popped out to me, like Berserk, for instance. I mean, like heavily kind of influenced by kind of like medieval, like Europe, England, I would say. And, you know, like Spice and Wolf, Attack on Titan, Vinland Saga has been pretty popular recently, as well as Frieren. But then I kind of looked a bit more into it, and I mean, it's kind of surprising really how much Europe does actually play into like settings within anime itself. I mean, a lot of people, maybe if you're not even into anime as much, I mean, the Studio Ghibli movies, I mean, Miyazaki visited like several European countries and took lots of photos of them, and he kind of used to make the settings of those Ghibli movies, like Kiki's Delivery Service. I mean, if you watch it, you can definitely tell like the European settings and the landscapes from it, but it doesn't really tie into just one country. It's like a mishmash of loads of different ones. Like it could be like France, Italy, Germany, but it's not like one, but there's that big influence kind of leading into the settings of those, which can help people kind of identify it as well. And it goes back even further than that, really, from some of the research I did. But yeah, that's kind of my main first thoughts from it.
A realistic approach is usually how people like to do storytelling. So them going to Europe, traveling around, getting inspirations, typically how older films used to do. Because a lot of people, when they shoot for live-action films, will have to shoot on a real-life location. So they have to like do a visual photography, make a game plan of what they actually want to be seeing and how they want to be captured. And with, you know, animation, instead of doing a visual photography in a physical setting, they would take that inspiration, like visual photography, and turn it into their backdrops or the design of buildings or certain streets, certain shots. You know, they would take smaller details and transform it into the flow of the animation drawing itself, the panels. So when they actually make it, it actually has that realistic feel because it has unique Pacific style where they draw the inspiration, like Europe being a main inspiration for that to happen.
Yeah, so I mean, like the shows I mentioned before, I mean, you can look at those and you can definitely see from like the backdrops that they have a very European feel to them. They might not necessarily have gone to these places, but like it's kind of this really strange feeling of it's Europe without a specific setting, but you can kind of recognize where it is. It's almost like almost like a fantasized Europe. It's kind of stuck in this time and place. I noticed there's a lot of like steampunk, kind of like medieval kind of settings of like ones that are used in anime, which, you know, they kind of just feel like they're stuck in the same place, but you can kind of definitely tell like they're Europe. Like I watch like...
Well, steampunk, medieval and gothic are actually the three main periods in which anime takes a lot of inspiration from. Gothic has all the different like landscapes, architecture, the old cathedrals, the churches, that type of stuff. But then you get into medieval of the older times, you know, the Black Plague, the Dark Ages, being like how, I guess, fighting would be very good into a historical fiction type of genre as well, because of how historic it's actually really close to other periods of history.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you've got like you kind of have some of the settings where they're kind of like more maybe peaceful villages, or again, it can lend into like Berserk's type of world where it kind of goes more into the darkness and the grittiness of it, or like Vinland Saga as well, where it kind of takes some inspiration from like myths. From the Vikings, like from the myths, that folklore that was passed down. But, you know, it's mostly set between England and being invaded by the Danes. But you get a lot of the darkness as well from those kind of settings where there's a lot of pillaging and raping and violence going on.
Yeah. And another one that I actually don't want to mention for European landscapes is Black Butler. It's more in the Gothic period. It's not steampunk, but it's definitely very aristocratic Gothic. I don't know what else to say about that one. Because you see the aristocracy in the main character. We also see a fantastical element in demons being supernatural.
Yeah, I mean,
and they would actually display that in the actual mansion in a manner, play fan time, you know, being the main character. You could see that more aristocratic nobility status that Europe has been known for.
Yeah, there's a couple like noble families which feature in Black Butler. So the main characters, CL Phantomhive, the Phantomhive family, but
yeah,
it kind of had like close connections to the underworld. They investigate crimes on behalf of the queen, but again, there's that supernatural element from the Gothic, like you said, with the demons, with Sebastian serving as the butler for CL from a pact they made. Yeah, so I mean, I've actually been rewatching that Butler. It's one of the first ones I watched, actually, one of my first animes. I only watched the first season, but I'm getting into the other seasons now. But I mean, it's really cool seeing London in anime, because it's not very often I see sort of a bit more of a modern like England within anime. Usually it's kind of like older, but to see like Victorian London is really interesting to see how it's looked at from like an Eastern lens within an anime.
Yeah, the Victorian period is definitely interesting as a storytelling. A lot of real life action will actually take place in Victoria, but not a lot of anime. So it has like a totally opposite effect.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those genres, I would say, I mean, well, settings, which I don't think has been explored as much compared to some other types of settings. So it's great to see that. And I have to look a bit more into where else, you know, London has been used for the Victorian era, but it's a bit, it might have hit that kind of niche, I think, perhaps, but there might be more that I'll have to look into it.
Yeah, I think in the Victorian genre, I think London, the centerpiece is kind of overused. It's because of how synonymous it is with Victorian period.
Yeah.
So there is that. Sometimes certain cities are overused as an element for that very reason. So that's European landscapes. Let's dive into the growing genre of shonen, the shonen genre. What have you seen that shonen has actually taken root in actually transforming the anime base?
I was having a look at some of the trends, like some of the more bestsellers, which have been going on like more in the UK, I would say, but it would also just apply to the Western Europe as well, since there is a lot of crossover. But I mean, there's like the big ones. There's, you know, there's Jujutsu Kaisen, there's Demon Slayer, Solo Leveling recently won, you know, Anime of the Year recently. One Piece obviously is, as long as it exists, it's going to be popular. Dandadan as well. Kind of a more of a recent anime adaptation, which got very popular. So I mean, I think these are the mangas which have been pretty popular in the UK, for instance, but they kind of cross over to Europe as well. And
with them being introduced in the way they are, how do you think it's taken form when people actually like it?
Well, I guess with those ones, it's easy to watch and enjoy. I mean, there's a lot of action, so people will obviously be waiting for the next episode, for the next kind of fight or something. I mean, another one which I didn't really know much about was Blue Lock, which I think is like a sports one.
Yeah.
Football anime. But I mean, it's obvious that it would kind of be popular right here as well, because football or soccer is, well, extremely popular, and it's going to vibe with a lot of people.
Yeah, I think definitely Blue Lock being a cultural reference to UK and how football is taken in that type of frame would feel like that would be something they would like. But you also have to take into consideration, you know, Shonen didn't really take off until much later in Europe, especially in the UK, for the simple fact that they didn't really have much of a community. Most of the older community was actually nostalgic. So having the Shonen come in, gain the popularity, it's an easy genre for people to enjoy, to actually more people that non-anime can actually like and watch.
Yeah, I mean, when I was younger, there wasn't as much variety of Shonen. It was, I think I mentioned it before, but like, you know, it was things like Yu-Gi-Oh, yeah, things like Dragon Ball Z. They were kind of like the main ones that a lot of people have heard of, but there wasn't a lot of diversity with Shonen, I would say. And like the last couple of years, especially, there's been like a big increase, I would say. Like Chainsaw Man was like absolutely huge. You know, when it was introduced back in like 2022, you know, when Netflix, they did the adaptation for it. Obviously, the manga has been around for longer than that, but, you know, it was extremely popular. Jujutsu Kaisen as well, My Hero Academia. It's not just the same shows anymore. There's like a load of different ones. I think it's also kind of resulted in more of an increase and wider fan base as well. Like, it's not just nostalgic anymore. People aren't just nostalgic for Dragon Ball Z or, you know, for Pokemon or for Yu-Gi-Oh. I mean, there's like way more things to watch now.
Oh, yeah. Like,
it's also partly that diversity of how more diverse Shonen is, I think, is increasing, like, how many more people are starting to watch and, like, consume anime and manga in, like, Europe. Especially the UK as well, because I think it was also quite recently where obviously there was like a bit of a fan base for anime and manga in the UK, but because of things like licensing and such, it was harder for us to get hold of things. But with like more streaming services and the more range of genres, people have like started to really kick off and start watching a lot more stuff. And you can kind of like maybe link it back as well to like the pandemic and to the lockdowns as well, when people stuck at home, it stopped becoming a niche category, manga, and then, you know, an anime. People just started consuming a lot more of it because they have access to it from home and from like from their personal devices. But it just really kicked off the past few years.
Yeah, and during the pandemic, globally, a lot of people didn't have access to the traditional entertainment that they would have. So anime being a gateway for easy consumption was already there. But people had to rediscover or be introduced to it as a means for alternative entertainment, because there wasn't a lot to do. And I bet, wasn't it like more lockdown-ish in the UK? Or like, what was the effect of that
over there? Yeah, it was kind of interesting here, because we had like a few different lockdowns. We had like the main one back in like 2020. Then it did open up for a few months at some point, and then there was another lockdown. It was like quite chaotic with the structure of them all, so
yeah,
a lot of people quite unsure. I mean, what we're meant to be doing, so
yeah,
and that's kind of like when streaming just like absolutely really
took off.
Blew up, I think took off a lot here. Yeah, States, I mean, there isn't anyone who doesn't know about it.
Yeah, in the States we had a similar issue. Each state would design its own law, how it do its own ordinances for the pandemic. You had the national guidelines, but each state had its own. And then health department coming in, if you didn't wear a mask, you have to be open for so many extra sanitation. I don't know. It just pretty much derailed everything, discouraged people from going out. And anime was a tool that some people enjoyed to be streamlining it in a more mainstream way for the entertainment section of anime and manga. That's what I think it did. And by that introduction to a new fan base, then you have, you know, maybe a huge influx of people going into the community. Like the fans growing it and evolving how the time had changed for that sector.
Yeah, definitely. One of the big stores in London here is Forbidden Planet. And I think they did... they had some interesting discussion on that as well. They're talking a bit about how the people going into their stores have diversified quite a bit in the last few years. They said like a few years ago, you know, it would be either a lot of late teenagers, boys, or like men in their 30s and 40s going into the store. And now there's like just a lot more variety of people going in. It's like not just late teen boys, but, you know, a bunch of school kids. They just got out of school. they're going down to the store because they're excited about the new manga that's come out, like a new edition, and a lot of them are younger teens as well, people in their 20s, and you know, when you're really interested in something, you learn a lot more about it. It's just resulted in a big shift of a lot more people getting into manga, and you know, as a whole anime as well, because they're both quite connected to each other.
Okay. And is there any other like shifts in the fans, you know, driving, evolving with the community, like building it up? Is there anything else you've been noticing that has that same impact?
But yeah, there are some other interesting observations I had as well, I suppose. I mean, people maybe who weren't necessarily as interested in anime. I mean, Gacha, for instance, has been very popular lately, like Genshin, Star Rail, Zenless Zone Zero. But I mean, they take on like anime aesthetics, but within gaming, they, you know, they really kind of like, they really take on the anime aesthetic. And it has also kind of driven that kind of shift as well with gaming, I guess. A lot more people are getting into that, getting interested in that kind of design or use of the characters.
Yeah, I can see that. The art form has definitely taken off, and gaming is a very multimedia format that's going to take that art form and transform it into other aesthetics that's visually pleasing but also still playable.
Yeah.
I mean, I see it. But isn't, well, the design that gets your impact, wasn't that like originated from Japan, though?
It's interesting because it was a Chinese studio, wasn't it?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's all of this. I mean, they obviously see like the appeal of like anime designs, like the minimalist look of the characters. They look very pleasing to the eye, so they've used the characters. And then, I mean, like, every few years, Hoyo have been making like a new different kind of like gacha game, and you know, they carry that on, and it's very popular, and it's like really big money maker for them. It's not going to be going away anytime soon. But that's just like another interesting
people
kind of
like it. It's
mission, I know.
Definitely, very creative, different things to do. With the sector of the European, especially UK and other stuff, what have you seen anime aesthetics taking form in, like the UK, being used in a way that's different than before?
I can't really think of anything off the top of my head for that one.
Any advertisements or commercials being different?
I would say sometimes animation does get used a bit more for commercials, but I wouldn't say that they're used specifically in the design of like anime characters. It's just maybe like companies can recognize that, you know, you can make your commercials maybe cheaper to produce by using animation rather than having live actors directing them. So I wouldn't necessarily say that they look like anime characters, though. They are just like regular animated characters that they can use.
Gotcha.
But I would say there's maybe a bit more of an increase in that kind of use of commercials there.
Oh, okay. So with the fans driving the community, what is one sector that you've seen that's been very popular in group activities?
In what way exactly?
Just driving the anime fan basis in the community, but gathering together.
Well, I think they've been around for a while, but I mean, we have had conventions. Conventions have always been like kind of a thing here for the past few years. I mean, the biggest ones are probably like MCM, which takes place in London. There's a lot of the big conventions, but that isn't just like anime. It's you know, it's comic books, movies as well, video games. We do have like a specific kind of like anime conventions as well, which take place across different cities, which are just literally anime focused. But you know, they take place in London, they take place in like say Bristol, Manchester. They take place across different cities, but I'd say those are kind of places where there are a big gathering of different fans, where you know, there'll be a lot of cosplay. You know, you can go to different stands, you can buy manga, you can buy figurines, you can meet other fans there, talk to them. I mean, I'd say those are probably the biggest in terms of like maybe a physical cultural shift, like people gathering in one place. That's probably the thing which sticks out most to me, which I have like visited a few different conventions as well.
Yeah,
in the UK.
That's interesting, because has there been more people going to these events now, or have you been like it's been the same amount of people?
It's interesting because the first one I went to was, I think, maybe one of the first times reopened from our first lockdown. Mm-hmm. I went to one in Bristol, which is like one which is like kind of fairly close to me, I would say.
Yeah.
I would say it was pretty busy. I mean, it's not going to be as busy as say one in like London, which just has like loads of people there. But I'd say I have I've been to a couple, but it's hard to gauge whether there's been a big increase in people going to the conventions. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there has been an increase, because I feel like the anime fan base is only going to continue to keep growing. And as a result, it's going to result in more people wanting to go to these places.
Oh, okay.
To, you know, check out merchandising, to check out people, meet other people, make friends and such.
That makes sense. Has there any been really big anime-only stores that have been popping up? Or has this been like diverse format, medium, across different genres?
Yes, I mean, in my town, there aren't really any, but my town hasn't really had a lot of different variety of stores.
True.
But I mean, certainly places like, I mean, the places I've been to, like London and Bristol, there have been like more of an increase, I would say, in types of these stores, which you can go buy figurines, you can buy manga. The one I mentioned before, for instance, Forbidden Planet, they have like quite a big manga section there. They've been around for a while, but you know, not only manga, but they do comic books too and graphic novels. But manga is a big section of the store. There's a figure store right next to it. Wouldn't be surprised if there's other figure stores as well, you know, within London, big place. Same as Bristol as well, you know. There'll be a few different stores that you can go to where you can just buy specific manga or buy figurines. But I mean, there has been more of a shift as well in, you know, merchandising in terms of buying this kind of stuff in the UK itself.
Would you say that anime has a positive effect in Europe, at least being introduced and being mainstream slowly into society?
Positive effect. I mean, yeah, I guess so. I mean, I definitely don't think it's been a negative effect. I mean, I think if people are enjoying the stories and, you know, making connections and friends from this, it's always going to be a good thing to meet other people who like the same things as you. But also, I mean, it's good for the countries too itself when you think about it, because people are, you know, they're going to be consuming and buying stuff, and it's going to be good for, well, the economy as a whole, for people spending stuff. And it can be a cheaper hobby as well for manga, because I mean, it used to just be mostly like comic books and graphic novels, which can be expensive to buy. But I mean, I think, well, with manga, it's black and white and it's cheaper to produce, so you can get more pages for a less amount of money. So if you're like, say, a younger person, and like there's more places that you can buy manga, for instance, you know, if you have like an allowance, you can get more manga, and you know, it's a way for you to, they, you know, spend some of your money, you can entertain yourself for a lot more for cheaper, and you know, you can make friends with it. I would say it has had a good effect, I would say, especially with younger people.
Yeah, the demographics definitely interlap into how they integrate, want to view it, see it as entertainment, something to do, make it a hobby, maybe a pastime, depending on how they want, how to deeply dive into it. It's interesting, because is there any beginning effects like pop culture references of anime or manga popping up in England from time to time?
Well, I mean, there's always going to be like themes from specific animes which I think do pop up. I mean, for a while, JoJo memes for a while in the UK. I mean, we probably already, you know, heard if it's a reference or not. But I'd say really not any more than any other place.
Okay.
You know, you're going to get memes, they're going to carry across different countries, I would say. Not just like Europe, but you know, across the US as well.
True. Do you think the influx of social medias in Europe is positive for anime, or does it have a lot of content people posting about it?
Probably a positive, I would say. I mean, I think there's like a big one on TikTok where people like post their manga collections, and that's kind of gotten quite popular as well, like their physical manga collections. So, you know, big social platform, people joining that, wanting to interact with other users and posting, you know, things that they have themselves and talking about it with each other.
And which element of pop culture do you think is more popular, like sci-fi, comic, manga, other entertainment in that sector?
I'd say, hard to say really. I think both anime and manga are pretty popular, but anime is probably going to be more accessible, more popular, because you're not going to have to read. You can just, you know, you can watch it on your smartphone from a variety of different streaming services. I'd say anime is probably more popular. And I mean, comic books as well are always going to be popular as well. And I think maybe people are perhaps maybe shifting away a bit more from superheroes and comic books as we get a bit kind of like tired of the movies which are coming out. People may be moving a bit more to anime. is kind of what I think I'm seeing as well.
Okay. So the most proper you think is glowing the anime community, glowing within UK and the surrounding area.
I would think it's anime, yeah, from what I've seen. I know more people who watch anime than read manga.
Oh, okay. True.
That isn't to say, like, it's not popular manga, but I'd say anime's probably more accessible and a bit more mainstream people here.
True. You know, but you know, the pop culture, how would you define the pop culture of UK in a just generic setting?
Say, anime used to be quite niche, I would say, in the UK. When I was younger, was kind of maybe a bit more of a niche thing. Maybe, I feel like perhaps in like in your teenagers, in your teenage stage or like your 20s, it might have been a bit embarrassing at one point to watch anime, but it's become such a mainstream thing now that like it's such a, so many people are into it and they like it. I mean, I've seen a few people like wear anime t-shirts at the gym, so you can kind of like speaks for that, where it's not just people stuck at home watching it. It's like a lot of variety of people who like this stuff.
Do you think English defined by the musical elements and the thematic range with free values and stuff like that?
I'm not quite sure on that. Did you read it?
Do you think it's characterized by musical elements and thematic range? Just like different themes coming up to society, like commentary and stuff like that?
I don't think so. I think it is mostly, I mean, shonen is probably the biggest thing I would say here, and the different branches within shonen, which have you know, have just come out in the last few years. Most diversity of genres which are driving this, I think. I wouldn't necessarily say it's specific themes which characterized it.
Yeah.
But I mean,
youth culture, commentary.
But you know, like
personal interest.
But I mean, coming of age, I think, is always going to be quite a popular thing. You know, teenagers confronting like a new world or something and teaching
us
lessons.
Yeah, that does come up a lot. Movies, actually. Not necessarily anime, but a lot of real life action movies, simple plot lines, stuff like that. And that's always been there. And that's been around for a while, but it's more, it's very more focused, I would say, in film studies. And people actually want to make films dedicated to that. You don't. So there's higher, there's more I found in doing it, actually.
Just because of the different storytelling.
But yeah, I think the influx,
I think like in France,
you can go.
I was just going to say, I think like, I mean, I asked a couple different people as well. And I think France is, it's always had quite an interest in like anime and manga. There's been an interest in a lot of the genres. I think it's been taken a lot more seriously as an art form there with manga. So France, it's quite popular there. It's a good place for a weeb, I've been told.
Yeah, there's like fashion sector taking over and all the other stuff. It makes sense that the culture is have it in and have it around them because it fits a free-spirited individual who wants to maybe go there. So, I mean, you find that pretty into anime. But I also would say,
and some quite famous ones which I've quoted.
I would also say that,
I mean, you might have heard of the Rose of Versailles, which set in France.
That is very familiar. But yeah, as we
revolution.
Yeah, I definitely see that. And well, revolution and liberation is typically a really big theme. It's usually a historical theme. So and all the different overlapping history is typically a good story to type of.
So as we wrap this up with anime and European pop culture, what do you want to say to the audience before we go after we discuss that?
Yeah, I would say it's the more you look into it, Europe does play a big part of landscapes and within anime itself, and you can go down quite an interesting rabbit hole with it. Like I had a look at some of these, like some of the more early animes you could look at. Heidi, Girl of the Alps, really huge in Japan and other countries, not necessarily here in the UK. But it's interesting to look at how European landscapes, you know, are involved with the settings of these animes as well. And I think like, it's only going to continue to get bigger. So I feel like being a fan of anime and manga is a good time to be a fan. There's a lot more stuff coming.
True. It's a good time to have it, let it be told, and let's see actually how it happens. And also I feel like with it being so focused after post-pandemic, growing the way it has been, I think it's introduced the new markets, new audience, and actually connecting Europe into a mainstream mechanism for viewing the consumption of anime and manga. That's what I believe. as it slowly would integrate into the culture and, you know, be represented by popularity over time, become more part of what it, you know, not what it was then, but not what it is now, type of thing.
Definitely.
But yeah, that's anime in European pop culture. What's anything you want to tell the audience about yourself that you haven't already told them? Anything interesting?
Nah, I'm not that interesting.
Oh, he's definitely interesting. It's a really good guess.
I think I've said all I needed to say in my intro.
But yeah, that's Fox for you.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you for being here. It was a nice meeting and opportunity to have you discuss UK as a Pacific focus in pop culture and what you can actually reference by it. So that was really good. So thank you for being here.
No, thanks for having me as a guest.
But yeah, that concludes this episode. And it was fun having you, Fox.
Hi, guys.
This concludes another episode of MC Anime Podcast. MC Anime Podcast is available on podcast directories like Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. We also have our website at mcanimepodcast.com. If you want to directly support us, then follow Patreon blog MC Anime. Finally, if you want services for hire, then we're available on Fiverr for audio and video production, graphic design, idea consulting, and blog and article writing.